Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Mitch Moore of Strong Wealth. He is a financial advisor, really sharp dude. We talk about all sorts of things. We cover tax implications of Bitcoin, estate planning, a lot of hot takes in this episode. Really think you're going to like this one. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Mitch here. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Excited to be here, Michael. I'm excited to dive into I would say some more tangible, actionable advice for Bitcoiners, versus the moon boy math price predictions that you often hear on Bitcoin podcasts. I'm excited to get into this stuff and really hopefully help everybody listening.
That's good. We'll talk about price as little as possible. It gets exhausting. So I want to start with, I'm going to ask you, as I do on every episode, for an unpopular opinion at the end, but you've got sort of a mantra that you repeat. You say that hodling Bitcoin isn't a retirement plan. I'm mm-hmm. curious if you could talk about what you mean by that and what's your mm-hmm. defense of that position.
Yeah, for sure. So hodling is not a financial plan, I would say. It's even more broader than retirement planning specifically. Retirement planning is certainly a piece of it, and that is absolutely part of what prospects come to us in search of. People who own 100% Bitcoin, 20% allocation to Bitcoin. It's all across the gamut. But essentially, I would love to share some specific situations, just to help people kind of relate to what I'm saying here. But what I see all across, online, just Twitter specifically, that's where most Bitcoiners hang out outside of, Nostr, maybe something else. But, everyone seems to believe that just buy and hold is the answer to every financial question that they should be asking themselves. And to be just honest, if that is the answer that you're coming up with to everything that you're asking, one, you probably don't have a significant amount of wealth yet, which is totally fine. It's cool. Or you don't have a super high income, or maybe a business, or just a lot of variability, complexity in your financial situation, which is totally cool. Or two, you're not asking yourself the right questions. And so you're leaving blind spots in your financial future that is essentially jeopardizing that for your family. I'd love to share just a couple, if it's okay, just a couple prospect conversations that I've had just in the last 2 weeks that kind of demonstrate why this statement of hodling is not a financial plan is true. Is it all right if I go ahead and dive
into this? Yeah, let's hear it.
Cool. So yeah, I was on another podcast recently, the Theia podcast with Joe Consorti. And after he put it out on YouTube, I saw one of the comments that said, he says hodling is not a financial plan, but it seems like hodling and paying them is a financial plan. Really that you're not getting anything outside of working with us except for just maybe some encouragement to hold on, through the ups and downs, which most Bitcoiners don't need. I would argue no Bitcoiners really need if you're a true Bitcoiner at this point. And so from that, I was like, okay, I need to start sharing some more, details, some more specifics, get out of the clouds, get down in the weeds to demonstrate that this is legitimate. So just a few conversations I've had. I'll try to keep it brief, but I can ramble. So feel free to ask questions, cut me off, steer us in a different direction. So first guy that I spoke with, he's in his early 50s, married, multiple kids, lives in the United States, has a W-2 job with a high income, multi 7-figure net worth. About 50 to 60% of that is in Bitcoin or in MicroStrategy. The rest of it is in other equities, investments. He wants to retire in the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe this bull run's going to retire him, essentially, is what he's feeling like. So he wants to make sure that his daughters are taken care of. He has 3 kids and they're just now starting to become like young adult age, go to college. And then there's others still at home. So he wants to pay for their college. He wants to be able to pay for their weddings when that time comes up. He wants, again, retire in 2 years. He wants to set up his own charity and, fund that with his assets, also take on donations, but fund it himself and do some charitable work with his wealth. You know, he has money, some in retirement accounts. He has some in outside of retirement accounts and taxable accounts. He's still working his job. So he has employer benefits and retirement plan or, you know, retirement plan benefits that he could utilize. But he's like, you know, do I want to utilize those? You know, I'm in my early 50s. I can't necessarily access retirement assets yet. If I retire in 2 years, you know, will that make sense? And then he also has this large list of dreams and bucket list goals that he wants to achieve, him and his wife want to achieve. He said, I never thought that I would be this wealthy. And when we started to have kids, I told my wife that I don't want you to work. I want you to stay home, take care of the kids. And I promise you that it'll be worth it, you know, later on. I'll take care of our financial future. You take care of our family, and we'll achieve these dreams when retirement comes. And so he has this long list of bucket list dreams and goals that he wants to achieve. We haven't got into that long list yet. That's for our second call. You know, to get into that, he wanted to put it on a PowerPoint presentation and share it with us. And he was like, basically, he's like, I have all of these variables, all of these moving parts. Something that I didn't mention is he has family in a foreign country. So he's considering just leaving the U.S. entirely. You know, should I just go do that? But his daughters will be here. So he doesn't necessarily want to leave them. You know, there's a lot of implications with that. He has no estate plan in place. He doesn't know, you know, about the tax implications of his situations and different decisions he could make. And he doesn't know if he can achieve these wild dreams that he has. And so he's like, I want to share with you. I want you to help me, you know, take care of my family, make sure they have everything they need, pay for these other things that I want to pay for, help me achieve these goals, help me navigate taxes, help me navigate my estate plan. If I were to pass away, we need to make sure that my wife can access the Bitcoin. If both of us pass away, we need to make sure the daughters can access the Bitcoin, understand what it is, and be able to utilize it for their financial future. You know, it just, the list goes on. And he's a very smart guy. He's an economist by trade. He's become orange-pilled over the last, since 2021. He's been accumulating. And so he's a very intelligent guy, but there's just so many different variables, and he's not sure if he's able to achieve them with the current amount of wealth that he has and make the money last, you know, over his lifetime, because he will be, you know, retiring early, I suppose, from a traditional sense. And so we can help him with all of that stuff. And not to mention the technical aspects, you know, of self-custody. You know, if we set up a trust or something like that, how do you then custody the Bitcoin on the backside and make sure, you know, your heirs can access it, all that. So that's just one example where if I looked at that guy on the prospect call and I said, you know what, dude, just continue to hold. Just spend as you need, but just, you know, buy more if you can. If you can't, hold and, you know, spend it, you know, on whatever things like that, that's very unhelpful for him. That does not help him have confidence in his plan. Doesn't help him, you know, understand, can I achieve these goals? Can I take care of my daughters? Can I fund my charity? You know, can I do all these things, or do I need to leave and go to a country where there's less taxes? You know? So that's one example.
I guess quick question on that. So is your contention there that if it's unhelpful to just say hold your Bitcoin, that there's some like reallocation that needs to take place, or it, you know, because obviously as he you know, as he reaches retirement age, he's going to presumably have, I assume he's going to have cash flow needs, like dollar denominated cash flow needs, and exactly. I think that's where this is where it's, to me, it's a case by case basis, right? Like if you're nearing retirement, if you are retired, you have cash flow needs, you have to pay for your groceries and your grocery store might not accept Bitcoin. Right. So, like that's the case I think can be made. Yeah. And I know that I know that you've come up with this maybe useful mantra, but like, do you see that? And maybe you're going to get to a story. So don't let me, you know, interrupt you if that's the case, but like, if you're 25 and you suddenly have a lot of conviction around Bitcoin and you say, I'm going to keep enough cash set aside for a rainy day. You know, and then other than that, I'm pouring my money into Bitcoin. Do those sorts of circumstances, obviously they might change the way you think about allocation, but does that change the philosophy at all? Like, no, maybe Bitcoin is a financial plan, at a certain age, at a certain stage of life, you know, over a long enough time horizon that you might be holding that Bitcoin. Or is there some lack of conviction in Bitcoin certainty that maybe drives your philosophy, you know, like, well, who knows, you should have some stocks and bonds, you know, even in your 20s, because what if Bitcoin fails? What is it, I guess, that maybe is sort of driving your thought process on this?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. I appreciate that. So there's really two parts there. Okay. If we have a 25-year-old, they're working a W-2 job, they're saving $1,000 a month, they're not married, they don't have kids, and they're just wanting to stack sats. Okay. You know, yeah, you probably do not need to pay us and work with us to build a complete financial plan. Just keep doing what you're doing. You know, like, I'm readily, you know, able to admit that and say that not everyone needs a financial planner, like 100%. But you know, that era, I guess, or that stage of life only lasts so long. And so I'll give you another example of someone that I talked to that is a younger person, not nearing retirement, mm-hmm. and has some considerations that they need to think about. And then I'll also speak to your point of, is it a lack of conviction basically in us or in our clients that we decide, okay, we should own other assets. So this example is a younger guy in his 30s. He's about to sell his business, married, young kids. And so he's selling his business. So one, he has a large liquidation event. He's going to have a large windfall of income and capital gains, which have major tax implications. You know, we're talking seven figures. So that's one thing that needs to be planned around and hopefully minimize the tax on that business sale so he can, you know, maybe buy more Bitcoin than he would be able to otherwise. But one of the main primary pain points for him, he's multi, you know, eight-figure net worth. It's not a retirement plan that he needs. You know, his retirement plan is, I have enough money to do really whatever I want as long as I don't get crazy, you know? But what one of his biggest priorities was in reaching out to us. And again, this is a guy who works in finance, you know, well-connected in finance, very intelligent, you know, technical savvy Bitcoiner as well. And, he reached out to us because, he has been buying Bitcoin in a, 401k structure, a qualified structure since 2015. And so that money has essentially grown, as you know, to a substantial amount. And so now he's like, I need to get this out of this qualified structure as soon as possible, but I also need to do it in a tax efficient way. Because if he just goes ahead and pulls the money out, he's going to owe income tax on the amount that he takes out. He's going to owe 10% penalty because he is a young guy still. He's nowhere near 59 and a half. And so he's looking into strategies like, how can I make this happen? Basically, how can I get $10 million worth of Bitcoin out of a 401k structure without getting hit with this, you know, 30%+ income tax, as well as a 10% penalty? You know, almost half of his stack is completely gone now. And he has some issues with how he's custodying it and everything else that, you know, we could go into, but the premise is, how do I do this tax efficiently? And so we're looking into strategies like, okay, you know, should we, you know, first of all, we likely just need to do Roth conversions to get the tax bill out of the way. And so that will avoid the penalties. So we won't end up paying penalties. We'll just transfer the money from a 401k to a Roth. And we need to do that in like a sequenced approach, a Roth conversion ladder, if you will, of deciding when to do this and how much to do at each time while factoring in, okay, we have other income sources, you know, that we need to be paying attention to, so we're not creating this big tax bill on the back end. And so when you do a Roth conversion, there also starts a 5-year timeline of, you cannot pull the money out tax and penalty free for 5 years. So let's just say he moves $1 million from the 401k to a Roth. Okay, great. Now we have to figure out how to mitigate that tax bill. We avoided the 10% penalty, but now we have to wait 5 years, and then we can pull that $1 million back out of the Roth. It's not in a retirement account at all. And we can hold, you know, cold storage Bitcoin that's not in a qualified, you know, structure, which is exactly what he wants. And then the gains between that time are completely tax-free into the future. So we have to look at, okay, you know, do we buy, his idea was, do I go buy an apartment building and do a cost segregation, use bonus depreciation. Again, these are fiat tax, you know, strategies, but you know, it's ultimately at the end of the day going to allow him to maintain more of his Bitcoin. And so he's like, do I go do that? And we were able to say, you know, in order for that tax law, I won't get into the super details unless you want to, but in order for that tax loss from a big real estate building to actually offset a retirement distribution, you have to be a real estate professional. So there's a lot of criteria you would have to meet, which is a big lifestyle commitment. Basically, now you work in real estate. He's sold his business. He wants to spend time with his young kids. Do you want to just go now create a job for yourself all to save taxes on the back end? Probably not. And so, yeah, we can look into buying a business that would allow us to do the same thing. We could look into buying short-term rentals that could allow us to do the same thing. But again, those are big lifestyle commitments that you're making. We could look into Bitcoin mining, because Bitcoin mining, the tax losses of depreciating the hardware could offset a retirement distribution. And you could do it with the hosted mining setup to where you're not really doing any of the work, but you're still getting the tax benefits on the back end. That could work, but you know, we go into a bull market like we're expecting to, and Bitcoin mining historically outperforms spot Bitcoin in a bull market. So like, would we end up being so profitable that the tax loss just wouldn't even be there? Okay, you know, I know that's a bad problem, or you know, good problem to have, but there's a lot of considerations here. How can we do this? Should we use a charitable trust structure that allows them to get the charitable deduction on the front end, take the assets back on the back end after making annual payments to a charity? You know, there are some complexities with that, but that could work to where we do the Roth conversion, we avoid the taxes, we make a charitable contribution with assets outside of the 401k. You know, anyways, I'm not going to continue to beat the dead horse maybe at this point, but the point is okay, continue to hold on to your Bitcoin. If that's the answer for that guy, sure, he'll be wealthy. Like, he will, you know, he probably will not be able to feed his kids one day, or, you know, not be able to fund his retirement when he's 60. But if we're able to save him $5 million in taxes over the next 5-year period, it's worth it just to pay us a fraction of that amount and secure more Bitcoin for generational wealth into the future.
So what do you think about in terms of the hurdle rate? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, well, taxes and fees for early withdrawals and those sorts of things. And, you know, at different times and at different stages, there might be a compelling case to take the hit. I think taxes are probably more complicated because we just have a complicated tax code and many implications. When it comes to like early withdrawal fees, you know, if it's 10%, you know, out of a particular account, you could probably make a compelling case that if your base case for Bitcoin and you know what you perceive the hurdle rate to be is, call it 40, 50, 60%, you know, somewhere in that range, might be worth it to just, you know, take the hit one time and then, you know, see that compound into the future. Do you talk about that with clients? Like, hey, like what are you expecting Bitcoin to do? Here's what it's done historically. And in light of that, it might change, you know, we might do unconventional things that a typical financial advisor would never do, because all they think about is yield. All they think about is early withdrawal fees, you know, and so forth. Do you find yourself in that situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not a, hey, let's utilize all of these strategies that are TradFi strategies, you know, just because they're there and we can save on taxes. At the end of the day, if simplicity is what you want and that's the route we want to go, fine, let's go there. But most people aren't able to kind of project out what that will look like and what the implications of that is on their future. You know, okay, we can just map that out. Let's say, okay, we take the tax hit now. What would that be? Well, we don't know what the tax hit would be unless we understand how much profit are you making in your business. You know, do you have a W-2 job, or do you have equity compensation from your job? Like, there's a lot of other things that change your tax bill that aren't related to this one decision of pulling the money out of a retirement account or a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, you know, whatever you want to say. And so if we just play out those strategies into the future, say, here are the trade-offs, here's what it's going to look like, and that's the route they want to go, just take the tax hit, get it out of the qualified structure and move on with your life. Sure. You know, and that might be the right answer for even this guy that I'm describing here. But understanding all of his choices and the implications of each one and how they play together with all of the other factors in his life of business sale. You know, he already owns a significant amount of assets outside of Bitcoin, outside of the qualified structure. And so he has a lot of other implications in it in his life that he's considering and needs to know how this one decision plays in and affects all the other decisions that he's thinking about too. You know, a lot of people love to look at these things in a silo and say, okay, yeah, Bitcoin's going to return, you know, compound at 45%, you know, compound annual growth rate. Whether that continues to happen or not, we don't know, but it could. And, you know, if I go ahead and I'm going to owe 25% in income taxes and I'm going to owe 10% in early withdrawal penalties, you know, okay, fine. Take that on a $500,000 distribution, pay the tax, you know, okay, you'll make up, you know, what you paid in however many years, you know, we can run out those scenarios. But, you know, even with that, like I said, there's a lot of other variables to consider. And we're still basically only speaking to the portfolio management side of a financial situation. We're not talking about insurance, estate planning considerations, you know, the cash flow picture, like you said, the retirement picture. Like, we're not talking about all these other things that we go into with clients. And so, you know, if it is just a black and white, you know, this choice or that choice, you know, we can run the numbers out and you can make a decision, but, you know, how does that affect your goal of wanting to fund your charity or pay for your daughter's wedding or, you know, whatever it may be, when people have more of these variables involved?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So let's, and I imagine too, that it matters a lot, the level of conviction that the client has in Bitcoin to begin with, because there are Bitcoiners and there are Bitcoiners and there, you know, people all over sort of the spectrum. Right. So, okay, let's take a step back. Why don't you tell me just oh yeah, go on.
That question that you mentioned earlier, I didn't address it. So the conviction thing that you're saying, is that a lack of conviction in us or lack of conviction in the client that we're saying, oh, you should own other assets? Obviously it's a client by client basis, like you're saying, but I think it's also important for Bitcoiners to zoom out. And, you know, we're a lot of people get into this mindset of I need to accumulate as much as possible and hold it for as long as possible, which is great, you know, amazing. Like, we all see, you know, what Bitcoin is in this Bitcoin space, and the rest of the world doesn't see it. So we're like, let's get there before everyone else figures this out. I totally understand that. But at the end of the day, when you're, you know, these situations that I've mentioned, or I even have a third one I could go into, when you're a 45-year-old guy with three kids, a wife, you know, you're paying a mortgage, you have your job or you have your business or, you know, whatever else, you have all these things going on, all these variables, your main goal is like taking care of your family, making sure your financial future is secure. You want to be a great dad. You want to be a great husband. You want to grow in your faith. Maybe, you know, you want to take care of your health. Like, you're not just accumulate as much as possible at the sacrifice of everything else. And so zooming out and realizing that really the goal that I want to achieve is, you know, take care of my family, take care of myself, and get the most out of this life that I can. And maybe that looks like 100% Bitcoin allocation for some people, but maybe it doesn't. You know, maybe it's okay if you're worth $2 million and you have $1 million in Bitcoin. It's probably going to be enough to take care of you if you're 35, 40 years old, you know, like that. It's okay. It doesn't have to be 100% all in, you know, doesn't matter what happens. Like, I'm holding on for dear life. It just doesn't have to be that, because you want to optimize for making sure that you can achieve the goals that you want to achieve and taking care of your family. I mean, again, you know, recognizing that how the wealth actually helps you live your life and achieve the dreams and goals that you have is important. And we need to take that next step. And that doesn't have to look like I'm all in at the expense of everything else, no matter what happens.
So, hey, let's take a step back. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your business, what you do. I think we covered a lot of good stuff, but we're going to dive into the weeds here in a minute.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, 27, married, you know, we're starting our family soon. living in Colorado. I've been doing this. I started Strong Wealth back in 2021 after working for Charles Schwab for a few years out of school. Studied finance in college. None of this was ever explained to me. It wasn't until, a funny story, actually, when I was working at Schwab, I would take a lot of calls from investors. And during the 2020, COVID crash that happened, there were just thousands and thousands and thousands of people calling in to talk about what's going on. Basically, they're seeing the market get halted, 10% drops in their portfolios, just tanking. And it was actually that same day that somebody called in. It was an older guy. He said that he lives mostly off grid. So he had to like come into town to call in and talk. He has some of his money at Schwab, but he also has a lot of gold. And he has a lot of gold like in his house and also some in his backyard. And so he was, I had gotten a few of those guys before, and it's easy to just tune them out. They start rambling on and you can tune them out. But this guy asked me, he said, "Mitch, you seem like a smart guy." And who knows why, but you seem like a smart guy. And he said, "Do you know that the Federal Reserve is not a institute, like a government institution at all? It's actually a private institution, and they control the money." And I stopped for a second, and I was like, "Actually, no, I didn't know that." And he said, "Well, I encourage you to read a book. It's called The Creature of Jekyll Island." And that's all he said. He said, "I would just encourage you to read that book." And we went on talking about other stuff, and that was it. And I really didn't think much of it at the time. But then whenever I was going to start this business, I wasn't focused on Bitcoiners at that point. I was focused on young entrepreneurs as our target client. But Bitcoin was on a run at that point. And I was like, well, I need to know what this is to know if I need to recommend this to my clients. Is this something that they should own, that they should be, investing in? And so through that, I found Sailor, I found Breedlove, I found, Safedin and the Fiat Standard, Bitcoin Standard, Sailor series on Breedlove's podcast, all that stuff, the typical story, I suppose, of somebody who came to Bitcoin in my era, I guess. And that's, what ultimately, orange pilled me. So we've been in business for 3 years. I actually brought on a business partner last year, who was even more of a Bitcoiner than I am. And very technical. And so that really is what, shifted us within the last year from, we're not going to work with any normies anymore. Essentially, we're only going to work with Bitcoiners. And so that's where we are now. But that's just a little bit about me, I guess.
Well, congratulations on 3 years. So I'm curious how you, I guess you're working with Bitcoiners. And so they approach you with an understanding already, varying levels of conviction, varying levels of understanding as to what Bitcoin is. When you talk about Bitcoin with clients, how are you framing it? Are you framing it as a form of money? Are you framing it as like an asset class to be allocated to? Is digital gold? Is something else? Or how do you think about it?
Yeah, it can go different ways depending on how they view it. But, there is the Bitcoin as money crowd, I would say. And it's like they have the world view of everything's going to zero against Bitcoin. That is like the part of my portfolio to where if everything at fiat truly does collapse, then I need to own, spot Bitcoin and cold storage, and that's going to be my money, into the future. And we can play that scenario out, of course, and what that means from a financial planning perspective and the other things that I mentioned. But then there is the crowd of this is an asset, class that I'm investing in as part of my portfolio. Yes, for returns, but they also get it to some extent as far as, if the fiat system completely collapses, this is going to be what's left. And this is likely going to be the new money that we, move on to. But it's not as a hardcore approach, I guess. And so it depends on the person, again, where we're going to go with things, and what their future worldview is and what they think is going to happen. And then we'll kind of help them, you know, think about how their situation plays into that future scenario, depending on what that looks like. So there's really not any one specific way that we're framing it. I would say we're not having to sell Bitcoin to people essentially. So, you know, they'll have their ways that they already see it. And then we'll kind of blend their worldview in with, okay, here's some other things you need to be thinking about, even if that maybe doesn't happen, or if that does happen, you know, here's what things could look like, et cetera. So that's why we decided to go all in on Bitcoiners, because one, we realized that one, just hodling is not a financial plan. And I think I can get most people to agree with that with enough conversation. But also, you know, we're able to blend the technical expertise of, you know, maybe even what you guys do, the Bitcoin way, with the security and self-custody and all those aspects, you know, blend those into the TradFi system or knowledge that we have and offer the best of both worlds to Bitcoiners. So, yeah, I mean, we're not having to orange pill people basically. So it's not like we have this whole, you know, route that we take people down, journey we take people down whenever they come in to work with us.
On average, would you say, let's say someone comes to you, they're a Bitcoiner and they've got, you know, some portion of fiat, some portion of Bitcoin, you know, in their portfolio. And again, like, I don't think of Bitcoin as an asset class, but for the sake of this sort of conversation, I think it's useful to maybe discuss it that way. I think of it as money.
Sure.
But do you find yourself looking to right size their portfolio? My assumption is the average person who comes to you probably doesn't have the exact allocation of everything that you would recommend for their, you know, for their lifestyle, for their goals, their objectives. Do you find yourself encouraging clients into more Bitcoin typically, or less Bitcoin, or obviously it depends. It's probably a case by case basis, but, right. If your average client comes to you, what sorts of changes to their portfolio are you typically making?
Yeah.
Hard question. Cause there's no average client, which I understand. Right. I'm just curious to, you know, like what might be a common thing that you see?
I would say it's never own less. that's never really a conversation that we are pushing a client into. I will say there are people that come to us that feel like, okay, the amount I own is good enough. If it goes on the bull run we expect, I may want to reallocate, you know, into some other things just because they don't feel comfortable with that, you know, amount of their wealth in Bitcoin. So if they come in from that starting place, we'll go with them on it and talk through everything, you know, the considerations. And most of the time, our view is you probably do own enough Bitcoin to achieve what you want to achieve, assuming Bitcoin becomes what we expect it to become. And so we're happy to go down that road, play that out. And if the decision ultimately does come to, I'm just not comfortable with this, you know, because again, they get Bitcoin already. And so it's okay. It's okay not to be 100%, you know, all in on Bitcoin and still be a Bitcoiner, still get it and understand it, and not feel like, oh, this is the only thing I can own. So we'll go down that path. If someone is not there, though, we're not talking them out of where they are now. It's usually a conversation of, should we own more or should we stop here, essentially. You know, obviously that can depend because some people, yeah, they're nearing retirement. So now they're going to start drawing down their assets, which is a completely different conversation rather than someone who's still accumulating wealth, you know, into the future. And so there's really, I would say there's both sides of the table. Most people that we're working with, they are either happy with where they are, the amount of Bitcoin that they have, or they are thinking, okay, if Bitcoin, you know, increases the amount we expect in fiat terms, I think I do probably want to reallocate to other places, you know, with that money. So yeah. Does that answer your question? I guess.
Yeah, no, it does. So then I'm curious if Bitcoin shot to $500,000 a coin tomorrow, and again, like my goal here is not to have, you know, these moon boy predictions, but let's say it did.
You're good.
Yeah. And so you'd probably have a lot of clients who suddenly would go from, call it 50% of their net worth to, you know, 90% plus. Would you anticipate many or most of them reallocating because they're uncomfortable at that sort of allocation? Or would, you know, do you think a typical client would say, no, it looks skewed because this asset is performing well. Why would I sell the winner? Right. Do people start to get nervous at that sort of level of allocation?
Yeah, I would say it depends on the stage of life they're in. You know, most people who are later on in life, they're starting to think about, you know, retirement, taking care of their kids, generational wealth, you know, all that stuff. They may start to get uneasy with it. If it's someone who's 30 years old and, you know, or, you know, we talked the third scenario, I guess I was going to give you earlier, you know, mid 30s, planning to start a family soon, but, you know, still has multi, you know, 7-figure net worth, earn a high income, and about 40% of the assets are in Bitcoin right now. He came in saying, you know, if we see, you know, for your example, $500,000 Bitcoin, he didn't use that number, is much lower, but if we see that, I would feel uncomfortable. And so that's usually a surprising place for someone in that position to not feel comfortable, you know, in a younger stage of life, not thinking about living off the assets yet or anything like that. Typically, if they're younger, they're going to be, we're not touching it. You know, we'll, if we're still allocating to investing, we'll just put the money elsewhere and let the Bitcoin run. Like you're saying, but if it's someone nearing, you know, retirement, older, thinking about the future, in a much different way, they are usually uncomfortable, you know, with the 90% allocation. There are outliers, of course. You know, we have one client who's in his 60s and owns over 300 Bitcoin, and that's a large amount of his, you know, overall net worth, and he's chilling. He's perfectly fine with it. And so, yeah, it's hard to say, you know, one way or the other what people are going to feel, but I would say those two camps are typically what we see, the reactions at least.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, at least from, I mean, and again, maybe it's a stage of life, maybe it's where I'm at financially, but for me, like the idea of the allocation just hitting such a high percentage to me, furthers my conviction and reduces my, and sure, maybe I'm a risk taker, I don't know, reduces my likelihood of that, that urge to sell and reallocate, you know.
Sure.
But you know, obviously people have different priorities, different levels of risk tolerance and so forth. So I was just curious if that's something the whole allocation percentage thing to me, just, I think it trips people up because it's the way we've historically thought about investing in a fiat paradigm. It's like the 60-40 thing. And if that gets, you know, if a 60-40 portfolio flips and it's 60% bonds, well, now you need to reallocate. It's like, that's all, the answer is always reallocating to find this balance. And I think I was talking about this on one of our episodes. We have a little side show we do twice a week called Bitcoin Banter. And we were talking about, I think it was the, I don't know if you saw Cartwright, it's like a UK pension fund who allocated 3% to Bitcoin. And they're doing it in, they call it self-custody, but they're using multi-institutional custody. So it's actually Bitcoin, not ETFs.
Nice.
That they're entrusting to someone else, though. but I said that, I made the comment that my concern with these institutions, not that I really care, but my concern is they're going to get to 20% allocation because of what Bitcoin does. And they're going to say, okay, we got to right size our portfolio and get back down to 3%. And they're going to, you know, 10 years from now, they're going to look back and say, why the hell did we do that? You know, like we shot ourselves in the foot. We had such a big asymmetric upside that we could have taken advantage of. And, again, like this sort of, you know, traditional portfolio theory, I think messes with people's heads in many cases.
Mitch,
let's get tactical on a couple of things. So we've talked a little bit about taxes, and I know this is a complicated subject, but in terms of owning Bitcoin, perhaps earning in Bitcoin, which is something I do now. What are the tax implications? What are some of the common challenges that you need to help people work through, and what do you do about them?
Yeah, there's a lot of different directions that we could go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what one big thing is being a business owner or not being a business owner, or maybe working 1099, you know, like a salesperson, something like that. With a business owner, there are way too many things to even really go into. I'll speak to more Bitcoin specific, tax strategies, I guess. One thing that is interesting with Bitcoin is, and it's low hanging fruit, is tax loss harvesting or tax gain harvesting. You know, could go the other way too if you want to realize gains in a 0% tax bracket. But tax loss harvesting was something that really is beneficial during the bear markets, like we saw 2022, 2023, when, let's say, you're DCAing into Bitcoin and you're, you know, putting in $2,000 a month, something like that, into Bitcoin. You know, as prices rise, you're buying regardless. You know, that's what a DCA is. You're not worried about where price is. You're just continuing to allocate. You're going to have some that's bought in 50s, 60s, you know, all the way up to maybe even 67, 69,000. I can't remember exactly where we got to in 2021. Now we've ridden it all the way back down to 16,000. Well, if you own 10 Bitcoin, and let's say your cost basis is 60,000, because the price got you involved and then you became a Bitcoiner and you continue to buy no matter where it was, your cost basis is $600,000. Price is now down to 20,000. Okay, we have a $4,000 loss. It's unrealized at this point, but with Bitcoin, and you can't do this with other securities, is you can just sell and buy it right back. And that loss is now a tax loss, but you own the same amount of Bitcoin. Obviously, the transaction fees are something that's, you know, you need to consider as well, but it's genuinely minimal. You know, if you're moving it from cold storage, of course, we're going to have, you know, maybe on-chain fees, to consider also. So you may not want to do it. You may just want to keep it in cold storage, especially if you have no KYC Bitcoin. You know, there's a lot of considerations here, but it's just low-hanging fruit strategy for people who would like to do that. You know, so now you have sold, bought right back. You own the same amount of Bitcoin, but now you have a $400,000 tax loss that you can carry forward into the future to offset gains in the future, or you can use it to offset some of your income, you know, potentially. So that is one strategy that works really well with Bitcoin. It doesn't work with securities, because if you have the ETF or you have MicroStrategy or whatever, and you try to do that, they will not allow that loss. They say, okay, if you sell at a loss and then you have to wait at least 30 days to be able to buy back, and that loss actually count towards your taxes in this year. So there's wash sale rules is what that is called. With Bitcoin, that doesn't apply because Bitcoin is treated as a property. And so you can go ahead and do that. There is no wash sale rule. You know, that's a low hanging fruit that I think people can look at. But they need to be tracking their cost basis and everything as well, you know, yeah, into the future to be able to then substantiate that if they're going to use it to offset other things, going forward. There's a lot of other things that we could get into from a tax perspective. I think one thing people are thinking about right now is there's some people who are just aping into MicroStrategy or maybe all in on the ETFs in their 401ks or in their IRAs. And they're not thinking about the implications, you know, of that growing to whatever it may grow to, you know, into the future, or, the IRS coming knocking and needing the money now to be able to fund, you know, whatever's going on in the government. That's something to think about too, of course. But, this idea of kind of tax diversification, if you will, from an investing perspective can be helpful. Obviously, if you're just viewing Bitcoin as money and you don't care about any of the fiat system stuff, sure, whatever, this won't apply to you. But there are a lot of people who already have a lot of assets in these accounts. And now they're thinking, okay, what should I do? Should I, try to own spot Bitcoin with it, self-direct it? You know, could I go to maybe an Unchained or something? Do I continue just to pile money into these, you know, pre-tax accounts? So diversifying from a tax perspective is having some, you know, taxable assets, having some pre-tax assets, having some post-tax, you know, like Roth assets. So that's something that Bitcoiners should definitely look into. I think gifting is honestly going to become another highly valuable tax strategy for Bitcoiners, because right now you can afford, any one person can give $18,000 worth of assets to another person and not have to report anything on their taxes. And that does not count towards their lifetime exemption of estate taxes either. So, you know, if you're a, let's say you're a one fun strategy that I was just thinking of and playing around with the other day was, okay, I'm a young family, you know, a young couple. We've accumulated a really large amount of Bitcoin. You know, we could gift to one, our kids, but we could also gift upwards to our parents. And so, you know, if each person can give $18,000 per recipient without reporting anything, okay, well, each of us together could give $36,000 to, you know, my dad, your dad, my mom, your mom. You know, all of a sudden now we have, you know, what, $144,000 or something that we could give away, no tax implications whatsoever. And then when we, and then if they continue to hold whatever, receive the Bitcoin back with a step up in cost basis, you know, at that point when they pass away. So now, you know, you've essentially avoided all of the taxable gain that you've experienced over their lifetime. You know, and you were able to give it to them if they did want to spend it or needed to or whatever it may be. So that's an interesting one as far as gifting goes, just to get money out of your estate, you know, avoid the taxable gain, but also be charitable and generous. You know, I think that's an overlooked thing that a lot of Bitcoiners are going to have a tremendous opportunity to do. You know, if Bitcoin does play out like we expect, you know, there will be the opportunity to make real change among your family, you know, among your friends or your community or whatever. So the gifting strategies, maybe the donating strategies, are also something to look into. Yeah, I mean, we could go into many different ones if you wanted to. If you have maybe a specific situation or something, we could talk through. But those are a few that come to mind.
Yeah, no, I didn't have anything specific, but I mean, I'm sure you understand tax law and the, you know, the implications much better than I do. I, you know, I'm, because I view it as money, I am a, you know, a buy and hold kind of guy. Yeah. But like it is something I think about. Like right now I'm on the brink of reaching out to leadership at our church, and I want to get them accumulating Bitcoin. And yeah. I'm trying to think about like how do I even broach the subject, because I think in my experience, to the extent any I ever bring it up with normies, which is not very often, because the reaction is just, oh, huh, cool. There's just no interest, right? Like it's like they've heard it's a scam, they've heard it's for criminals, it's a tulip bulb mania all over again, like whatever. And so to even get them to like set aside their preconceived notions is so difficult. But the hard thing is I have very strong conviction that in the future, there's going to be a lot of influence to be had by the institutions. And I say institutions, not in the sense of Wall Street necessarily, though that will certainly be the case, but like your local church or, you know, different nonprofits, local businesses who adopt a Bitcoin standard or at least allocate toward Bitcoin proactively. And so I'm trying to think about in my own life, like, how do I do that? And my wife asked me, she's like, yeah, but what if like Bitcoin just tanked right after you have this conversation? Like, would you feel bad? I was like, maybe, but what if the dollar failed right, you know, right after you know, like it, like, the number of scenarios that that could play out are many. So I think about this stuff a lot. I'm happy to go down any other, if you have a comment on that, go for it. I'm happy to go anywhere else on the tax front. Want to get to estate planning too, though. So we can go a number of places here.
Sweet. Yeah. So the church conversation is something I'm in right now. So with my own church leadership. So I'll give you the route that I'm going. And I've also talked to I've also talked to a couple others. So one just little like short heartbreaking story was, I was talking to a friend who's a Bitcoiner as well. He used to be a financial advisor. He's not anymore. But he talked to his church and they were saving up to be able to purchase a new location and expand to another location for their church. And this is like a multi seven figure investment that they're looking to make into a property, you know, a big deal. And they had been holding the money in cash that people had given for this, you know, you're giving, extraordinarily above your tithe, you know, a gift to the church to fund this specific goal. And they had been holding it in cash since 2019, 2020. Here they are today, still haven't bought the building. And we know as Bitcoiners what has happened over that time. And that, yeah, exactly. That is just heartbreaking. You know, that is poor stewardship if we really want to get down into it. And so he's approaching that subject. He started with, I will donate in Bitcoin, and all I want you to do is agree to hold on to it. That's it. You don't have to allocate anything else. I will give. And then we just have to agree that you just hold it. That's it. So he's going about it that way. How I'm approaching it is actually with the book, Thank God for Bitcoin. Have you heard of that?
I have. Yeah. Got it on my shelf right here.
There you go. Yeah. So a great book, and it appeals to, okay, yeah, we have the financial system implications and what Bitcoin solves, but it's also the, as you've read the book, it's the moral, ethical kind of implications of a fiat financial system and how that aligns with scripture. And so that I gifted that to my pastor, who I meet with every other week, and he's reading through that right now. Whether or not that will work, we'll see. TBD. But that's how I'm approaching it, because if they can view it, you know, that's what matters most to the church, or at least what should matter most to the church, is are we living out, you know, what God, you know, calls of us essentially, and living in a way that aligns. And so if you can show them scripture where, hey, you know, maybe what we're, our current financial system and how it operates is entirely against our beliefs and our values, then we should go this other direction. And here's why and how, you know, Bitcoin is different from everything else in the fiat system. And so that's how I'm going about it, because it's really playing on the faith, you know, and the belief that we have in the Bible being the truth. And, you know, we're called to live that out. So we'll see. But that's my thoughts on it.
Well, I obviously share your faith. And for anyone listening, I mean, this doesn't, you know, don't take this as like, you know, it's got to be the church. I mean, I think about this too, with like the farm where I get raw milk, you know, like locally here. And typically the people who are doing that, who are putting in proof of work on real world value, are the people probably most likely to understand and appreciate this stuff. But it's like getting the right resource into their hands that they're, and you know, you can lead a horse to water, but if they're not going to read the book, it doesn't matter. If they're not going to sit down and have an open-minded conversation with you, it doesn't matter. So it's, you know, it's always, I think, an uphill battle, because people come to this with, you know, kind of brainwashed by legacy media FUD and, you know, any other, and just a recency bias that, well, this is how money's always worked. So, right. You know, I guess my encouragement to people is, whether it's your church or some other organization or business that you care about, like, you know, I think we need to, I'll speak for myself. I need to be more proactive and really take some of these steps and take it seriously, because my conviction is high, but that's not always reflected in how I approach the rest of the world. So, don't annoy your friends and family at Thanksgiving and Christmas, if they don't want to hear about it, but find the people who are maybe open-minded and go make a difference. Okay, so we talked a lot about taxes. Talk to me about estate planning. Mm-hmm. What are your, like, how do you approach this with Bitcoin specifically, maybe clients more generally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first off, just at a foundational level, I think a lot of people, Bitcoiners specifically, don't realize that, okay, if I just have a will in place, or if I don't have anything in place for my estate plan, then the legal process that would occur when you passed away is your assets would be determined. They would become public knowledge. So all of your assets are now doxed. You know, your Bitcoin, everything you own is public knowledge. The court then decides who gets it, and they will announce, you know, your son or your daughter or whoever, your brother, or, you know, whatever, depending on the situation, gets XYZ from Michael. Yeah, you know, he passed away. You know, assuming, you know, you and your spouse both pass away. And so a lot of people don't realize that. Okay, if I just have a will, I still go through that probate process. If I don't have anything, I still go through that probate process, which, yeah, can cost you time, money, you know, and cause issues, but also now your assets are public knowledge. If we start to get into a more tyrannical, you know, legal system, okay, well, there could be some issues with, hey, this guy owned a lot of Bitcoin, you know, like, who knows what could happen in that situation. So, you know, one, we want to avoid that from happening. So what we need to do at a base level is get some form of trust structure in place. The most common that, you know, most people would leverage is a revocable living trust. That essentially gives you the privacy that you want, and it gives you the control that you want to be able to, you know, lay out your end of life wishes in a more, you know, specific way rather than you would be able to if you had a will or you didn't have anything. So that at the most foundational level is important. And a lot of people will say, well, why can't I just give the keys to, you know, my son or son or my two kids or whatever. And that solves it. Okay. Well, you know, if we just play that out for a little bit, you know, one, the timing and education has to be there, to be able to make sure that they know what this is, they can access it, you know, et cetera. If you want to use an inheritance protocol on, you know, one of these collaborative custody providers, you know, I really appreciate your work, actually. I believe it's you sending out the newsletters for the Bitcoin Way, but talking about the downsides of collaborative custody, because it seems like no one is talking about those right now. It's sold as kind of like this, you know, one size fits
utopia,
all.
Panacea. Yeah. That's actually our chief marketing officer, Rick, who's written eloquently about that.
Gotcha.
I've talked about it too in my own personal Bitcoin newsletter, but if you're reading it from the Bitcoin Way, it's probably Rick.
Got it. Okay. So maybe that's what I did. One of those two, but anyways, the point is, okay, we can have the mechanical transfer of the keys and they can have the possession. Cool. If you don't make sure that that is all very clear, you know, explained, educated them, you know, all of that stuff, they could run into a lot of issues with that. One big problem in people think, okay, I set up this inheritance protocol with, you know, Unchained, Casa, whatever, and I'm good to go. The only thing that solves for is actually the, again, mechanical transfer of the keys of the Bitcoin. So, okay.
Possession.
Yeah. Possession. So that does not solve for legal title. And so you can do that, you know, sure, but they will then not be the legal owners of that Bitcoin. Let's say that, hey, you gave the Bitcoin to your son, maybe, and not your daughter, or maybe you did give it to your kids, but your brother knows about it or whatever. And now all of a sudden they want to sue, you know, the kids, or they want to, you know, get them into some litigation dispute. They're not going to be able to legally say, this is that I own this Bitcoin. You could say you lost it in a boating accident. Sure. You know, that we can go that route, I guess. But again, you're playing outside the lines, which I get it. But you know, if we want to make sure that our kids are protected, you know, the people that we're passing the Bitcoin to are protected, then we would make sure that they also have the legal title assigned to them, you know, for these assets. If we want to continue for generations to fly under the radar and outside the scope of, you know, of the system, I'm a Bitcoiner as well. I understand that perspective, but most people, that's not going to be the case. They don't want to continue to operate in the shadows for their entire life. You know, what happens if, okay, I give 10 Bitcoin to my kid and then it's worth, you know, however much, and they want to go actually use it for something, you know, spend it on something, that could raise some eyebrows. And then you're looking at maybe tax fraud, or other, you know, litigation issues, because again, this was not documented in a legal way to protect them, you know, into the future. And so I think it's important for a lot of Bitcoiners to understand that, because if you don't understand that, and then all of a sudden now, you know, our kids, yeah, they have the keys to the Bitcoin, whether they know how to use them or not, you know, or they know what Bitcoin is a whole nother conversation. But, you know, they don't have this legal title assigned to them. So that is critical and applies to everyone. As we scale up in net worth, there's a lot more estate planning implications because right now there is a lifetime exemption for estate taxes. Currently it's at $13.61 million per person, but it's $27.2 million per couple. Okay, so that's pretty high. You know, you got to have a sizable net worth if you were to pass away right now to be worried about estate taxes. However, that is set to be cut as of right now in 2026 by half. So that will drop back down to 13, you know, 14 million per couple, you know, 6-7 million per person. If we expect Bitcoin to do what Bitcoin does, well, you know, we could very quickly become, you know, worth these large amounts. And if we were to pass away, you know, even unexpectedly at an early age, and Bitcoin's worth that, all of a sudden, any money above that exemption amount, 40% of that goes to taxes. So, you know, you can see, you know, especially if we play this out over a long time horizon, if we continue to denominate everything in fiat, in USD, Bitcoin's going to be worth a significant amount of fiat. And so if those exemption limits do not, you know, they're adjusted by CPI, so they're going to be 2% a year, whatever, adjusted upwards. We all know that Bitcoin's going to grow much faster than that. You know, we could end up losing a large amount of our stack that's not able to be passed to future generations, kids, grandkids, etc. So there's high net worth, more estate planning implications, avoiding estate tax, you know, even maybe avoiding getting assets out of the estate so they're not accessible by creditors, you know, et cetera. There's a lot of other things there. But that at a foundational level, those are the estate planning implications that Bitcoiners need to be thinking about. Because in my experience, most people we talk to, maybe you as well, it's the husband is the Bitcoiner, the wife loves the husband, doesn't love the Bitcoin. Doesn't love the Bitcoin. Yes. And so they're like, I love you. I believe in you. You sound like you know what you're talking about. But that's it. That's the extent of the conversation. And so, you know, obviously that it can run into some issues if you were to get hit by a bus on your way to work, or maybe you don't die, but you become incapacitated and disabled. Like you need to have all this stuff in place as soon as possible, because we never know what could happen. This could happen any day, any moment, the next time we walk out of our house. So, that's at a base level, that's what Bitcoiners need to be thinking about.
Yeah. Well, first of all, are you good? You have a few more minutes and we're like sure. About the hour mark. Are you good? Okay. Sure. So I'm going to set you up then for my next question, with a preliminary question. And that is, do you believe in this notion of hyper Bitcoinization? And the way I'm defining hyper Bitcoinization is something like Bitcoin will be effectively the global reserve currency, spendable everywhere. Volatility will be massively reduced and it will be used as a unit of account. That's not to suggest that perhaps it doesn't exist alongside of fiat or, you know, probably dollars more specifically. Maybe gold is still hanging around in some capacity. Probably not. But do you believe in that future, I guess, is my first question. And you can expand on it, but that's sort of a yes or no question. And you can give your, you know, any nuanced response to that first.
Yeah. So I do believe in that future. However, I think it's going to take a lot longer than we expect. I could be completely wrong. We see the whole debt spiral, narrative playing out. With the dollar, obviously we've seen hyperinflation in other, third world countries and the devastation that causes. And, you know, money supply does effectively grow exponentially. And so, you know, that's only going to get faster and faster. So it could happen much faster than I expect. I just think that the way that this current system has been ingrained, assuming that they don't, you know, print us into hyperinflation, I think it's going to stay ingrained for a lot longer than we expect. But I still do believe that that future is one possible and likely on a long enough time horizon, because this will fail. It's just a matter of when, you know, no civilization lasts forever. And us being believers, we know eventually the world, you know, we won't be here anyways, but, that's my thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like I'm in the slowly then suddenly camp, but I'm also, or gradually then suddenly, however you want to frame it. I think the slowly could take a lot longer than many people expect. So I'm prepared for a long ride. I'm not making any projections over the time frame, but like, it wouldn't surprise me if it was 10, 20, 30 years. But I think during that time, I think Bitcoin will continue to grow steadily in adoption and utility. So then my question, and I think you and I are on the same page, it's going to take longer than people think, is at that point in time, do you think there is any utility in the work that you do today? Like, obviously you're bringing value to people who need, who have, broad DAX implications, aren't comfortable with 100% Bitcoin allocation, that sort of thing. I mean, do you think like the financial advisory industry just disappears in that sort of world?
So disappears, I think, is a strong word. Substantially lessened or cut, maybe, whatever you want to say, shrinks. Yeah, absolutely. The fiat complexity of our system creates all of these unnecessary jobs when you can just save money and you don't have to be an investor. You're not forced to be an investor in a future, where we're on a Bitcoin standard. However, I don't necessarily think it's completely eliminated for personal finance education for people. There's still going to be the there will be some form of, taxes. I would imagine there'd be some form of, saving or spending less than you make, kind of thing, and planning for future goals still that you want to achieve. It'll just be much more simplified, which is amazing, for the world as a whole. And definitely believe it can happen. But I just don't think that these type of conversations completely go away. The people that are shoving their clients into VOO or whatever you want to say, into index funds and charging 1% and not doing anything else for their clients, they need to go away right now. They'll definitely go away. There will be a lot of these other traders and derivatives and all this other stuff that will go away. But I just don't see it completely going away from my view. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm open-minded to either. I have a feeling, I think even on a Bitcoin standard, a lot of people won't understand money and will need hand-holding. I think it will be simplified. The other thing I could see, though, is right now, like my perception of, like I have a lot, I know some very, very sharp financial advisors. I also know a lot of financial advisors who just know to pour you into index funds. And it's like that, you don't have to be that smart. I sort of wonder if it almost becomes more of a consultative work where it's like, hey, the hurdle rate for Bitcoin into the future, let's say, is 10%, it's growing at 10% a year, like something real conservative because the volatility is decreased. It's globally adopted and used as money. But you're going to have people who still want to out earn Bitcoin, maybe because they didn't have a large stack or, whatever. And you might have a more consultative approach where it's like, hey, I'm looking for more like private equity opportunities for you. And like, are there local businesses you could invest in that we could maybe achieve? And so like, it's going to be more boots on the ground, handholding versus, hey, call me if you have any questions, when the markets dip or, pump, or we meet once a year to reallocate or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very different role than what, that isn't what financial advisors do today. I could see something like that perhaps playing out is, it's just like a whole new paradigm for what financial advisory is. But I think it's going to take a much higher caliber individual and a new skill set to serve that type of need. And, again, we'll have to see if that's, for me, I guess it's just like, unless it's like a friend or family member who I have a lot of conviction in, trust in, that has a really good idea. It's like right now the hurdle rate for Bitcoin is just way too high for me to think about dumping money into something that doesn't seem really, really promising. And maybe that's just a big win of Bitcoin adoption growing, is like all this speculation, these dumb Silicon Valley businesses that can only exist because of, loose money.
Yeah, more and more debt.
So yeah. Okay. Anyway, I got, we're going to start to round out the conversation here. We'll end with some fire. So any comments on the recent election results, what that might mean for Bitcoin, for your clients specifically?
Yeah. I mean, it's very positive. I would say, like we said before we hit record, I mean, to me, this is not a savior type situation where your life is going to be completely changed because of a different president. You still have to put in the personal proof of work, to make your future better if you want to. But, he's been much more positive towards Bitcoin. I don't think he doesn't get Bitcoin, but hopefully somebody talking to him does. It's very clear when you talk, play with your Bitcoins or whatever he said, at the Nashville conference. That killed me. Like we said before, I mean, it's just so much better than the alternative, in my mind, and from my perspective. So I think, we saw it in the current administration, just how, actively, against they, with choke point 2.0 and all this other stuff, attacking essentially, Bitcoin and the crypto industry as a whole. So I think it's much more positive. He even said he's going to start trying to pay down the debt. I there's no way that happens. I would be absolutely shocked. We'll see if Elon can make the government more efficient. Obviously, we would both prefer a smaller government. But yeah, overall, I think it's better for Americans. It's better for the economy, better for business. And it's better for our quality of life and our freedom. And so that ultimately, is better for, the innovation and the groundbreaking kind of paradigm shifting technology that Bitcoin is, to allow it to thrive and continue to grow. Businesses continue to build in Bitcoin, especially miners not, being attacked, or maybe it's the exchanges being attacked, whatever it may be. I don't see any of that happening with Trump, and it definitely could have happened with the alternative. So I think it's very good and very positive for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'll give you my thoughts, and I'll tell you a quick story about an ongoing conversation I've been having since election night with a friend, a Bitcoiner and a fellow anarcho-capitalist. I'd be interested to hear your comments. So effectively, I mean, philosophically, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. I can't rationalize any justification for you're born and because of some place that you're born, they're allowed to steal at a particular rate from you. Like, philosophically, I have a really hard time with that. Practically, I'm a very small government libertarian. Like, I don't think, this utopia that, anarchists dream of is likely. And I don't think we probably have an appreciation for all of the implications that could be. So, I'm open to just very, very small government where they're fixing potholes for us and, taking out the trash or whatever. So the conversation we've had, though, is because I've been supportive of Trump for the same reasons that you are. And, his point, and like we're both, what mainstream people would refer to as conspiracy theorists. I think we're observant, but not conspiracy theorists, but, his comment was like, would you even be open-minded though, to like the idea that like maybe the elites it's just a charade. They really do want Trump in power. They're hailing him, we're hailing him as this hero against global elitism. And like, this is a plant or, what I was like, listen, at this point in my Bitcoin journey, I would be open to anything. But the evidence to this point, we have 4 years of a Trump administration. The evidence suggests that one, he's not perfect. Debt is going to increase. We're going to continue to spend. I mean, fiscally, I have no faith that that situation gets better because of Trump. No. But we also have a historical record of Trump reducing regulation, appointing Supreme Court justices that, this isn't about like Roe v. Wade, whether you like Roe v. Wade or not, doesn't matter. They overturned the obvious unconstitutionality of that particular decision and pushed it back to the states. So you can write a law that reinstates Roe v. Wade at the federal level. That's one thing. But for now, they've pushed it to the states, which to me is smaller government. We get to decide at a more local level, which I think is important. So that's not a political statement. I'm making an observation of just where the power rests. And, you know, a lot of the things he's talking about are smaller government measures. We'll see. Again, I'm cautiously optimistic at best that that happens. But then you do see things like RFK. You could probably make a compelling case that the CIA killed his dad and his uncle. And so someone like that has a legitimate bone to pick with big government. And Mitch, I think I lost you for a second there. Hang on. It's trying to reconnect with you. So before we got cut off, I was saying, you know, I think RFK seems to have a very legitimate bone to pick with the federal government, or at least certainly many institutions within. And and because of that, you know, I pulled up a tweet while we got cut off. He said the FDA's war on public health is about to end. He talks about all of these things that have been blocked because they can't be patented by pharma. He said, if you work for the FDA and are part of this corrupt system, I have two messages for you. One, preserve your records, and two, pack your bags. And so I guess my point is, you can say all of these things, like, right, Trump can make all of these promises, and RFK can say that, and we can, as Bitcoiners, can get excited about it. Yeah. I guess my point is that when I look at the historical evidence, Trump has either done the things he said he's going to do, or has generally worked in that direction. And until that proves to be true, which I am completely open-minded to, I think that is a positive thing. And I think when you have someone like RFK who has joined your side, maybe he's power hungry, maybe he has no interest in making America healthy, but it seems like a guy who would have a personal vendetta against the federal government. And so in the meantime, my impression will be, I'm, again, cautiously optimistic. I'm skeptical, but it stands to reason that maybe he really does want to do a lot of the things that he says he's going to do. So I don't know. I'm curious. I think it's very easy to kind of go, full black pill on some of this and assume that politicians are all, you know, pedophiles, or, you know, they're all on the Epstein client list, or, you know, all shitty parties or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, like, I would be unsurprised to find it all out. So I'm very open-minded, and I'm skeptical, but I don't know. I'm just curious if you have any response to, or any comment on any of that. There's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like you, cautiously optimistic, kind of believe it when I see it, you know? I mean, I love to hear it. Nobody else has ever talked about specifically the health stuff. You know, he had another tweet, something about, January 20th, he's going to, I don't even know, do something to where there will no longer be fluoride in the public city water, which I'm all for. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he's mentioned a lot of things that, you know, prior to him were never mentioned in politics whatsoever, and were only mentioned in the esoteric health Twitter, people living on their homesteads and whatnot, which I'm a big fan of. But we'll see, you know, we can't put our faith, at the end of the day, we cannot put our faith in, you know, our health, our personal well-being, you know, our future. We can't put our hope and faith in politicians. And that's really where, you know, you and I, our faith comes into play. And at the end of the day, you know, we know that, we're going to be taken care of, by Jesus. So, I don't know, but I can say this, not to bring up another sensitive subject, but, you know, between 2021 and 2024, we'll say that Big Pharma had a heyday, with vaccines, and then the, you know, administration backed that up with vaccine mandates, and, you know, people getting kicked out of the military or fired from their jobs, or, you know, whatever it may be. I opted out of that entirely. But we saw the proof of what the other side is capable of. So hopefully this side is better, and at least gives us the chance to, exercise our, you know, individual freedoms, rather than what we saw in 2021 and beyond with all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. No. So I guess the takeaway, at least for me, is no pandering, no simping for Trump or anyone else. They got to prove it. But hopefully we're on a better trajectory. So yep. Mitch, last question for you. This is what I ask for of everyone. And we've probably hit on a few of these topics, but what is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners while you're at it?
Yeah. So obviously the hodling is not a financial plan can be controversial. Although I would venture to say, if I have a long enough conversation with anybody, we can come to an understanding and agreement. However, I won't use that since we've already kind of hit that. I'll take it a step further. For me, something that I have mentioned this in the call, but something that I see prevalent in the Bitcoin community is this mantra of, you know, accumulate as much as possible at all cost, basically. And essentially what you're saying is I would like to accumulate wealth as my highest priority in life. You know, that is what you are saying, by that being, you know, the belief that you hold in your mind. And so from my perspective, that is now making money your God, you know, at the end of the day. And so, and you know, even people who may not say, you know, I want to accumulate as much as possible at all costs, you still see it in the Bitcoin community at large, is Bitcoin is the savior, or Bitcoin is viewed as the savior, or it's God, or it's, you know, it is the top thing that they're thinking about all the time, talking about all the time, believe in, they put their hope in the future in. And that to me is unhealthy. You know, it is essentially, you know, a form of idol worship that is, you know, against the beliefs of our religion. And I just see it so rampant in the Bitcoin community. And I think that people really need to check themselves and kind of put things back into perspective of what Bitcoin is. You know, Bitcoin saved money, but at the end of the day, you know, for me and what I believe, Jesus saved my soul and has secured my eternity. And that's what is the highest priority in my life. And so I think we need to be careful that Bitcoin doesn't become our God in this community at large.
I think that'll make some people mad, Mitch. I love it. Awesome. Well, hey, why don't you give a handoff, tell people where they can find you, learn more about you. And thank you so much for making time today.
Yeah, I appreciate the conversation. It was great. So so our website is strongwealth.net. If you want to check out, you know, our services, what we do, you know, I'm at Mitch D. Moore on Twitter and other social platforms. So you can follow me there. There's also a Bitcoin Financial Advisors Network where there are some other financial advisors that talk about Bitcoin and advise on it to some extent. You know, and that's, if you just search Bitcoin Financial Advisors Network, that would come up. So you could check that out for other options. So at least you're not getting stuck with a TradFi normie who, you know, pushes you to sell all your Bitcoin. Again, I appreciate the opportunity, Michael, and really enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure, Mitch. Thank you so much for your time, man. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, do me a huge favor, subscribe to the channel, give us a like, comment, share it with someone. We would really appreciate the support. Make sure you check out Mitch and all the work that he is doing. And if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody, if you need to protect your online privacy, which you do, and if you want to set up a privacy phone, get a Plan B residency option, go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We would love to walk you through how it is that we help you do it the right way the first time. In the meantime, everyone stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.